That's fine.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here. Yesterday was terrifying. Today you're just scary. I'm not by nature an upfront person, and people were gentle yesterday. I expected much more pushback. But anyway, good afternoon. Have you had a good final day? Have you made some new friends, some new mates? Met some good people? Did some sessions? I've met some lovely people here. This has to be one of my very favorite places to come in the world. I've been here, as I mentioned yesterday, about a half a dozen times over 20 years, and it's a gift to be back. So it's going to be a little bit of a gallop, so I'm going to invite you to kind of bear with. We're going to be doing several different things in this session, quite different from yesterday. How many of you were here yesterday? Oh, people have a masochistic streak. Want to suffer some more? We'll try to make that happen, too. I want to find out, before we get going any further, why this session? Why are you here? I want to find out if what I prepared is anything like what you've come for. Why this session? Just holler out. Eventually, when we do more interaction, we'll have mics down front. But why this session? Well, you can talk to him afterwards and get him sorted, okay?
Tom, if you could repeat what people say, it will help them. Right?
Okay. Yeah. Other reasons you're here? Creating what?
Reimagining
how we do church. We are going to be talking about that. And I'm going to be talking every time. I've been coming to the UK for years, and I learn so much every time I come. But since the late 80s, I've primarily been learning from younger leaders, Johnny and Jenny Baker, Phil and Wendy Wall, Russell and Charlotte Rook. You have amazing young people in this country with tremendous commitment to Christ, to risk-taking, to imagination. I'm going to share some of those with you today. So, as an older guy, I'm going to tell you what I'm learning from young people in the UK, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and the US. God's doing something new through a new generation. So, other expectations? Last chance? Yes.
Radical discipleship as a way of renewing the church. Creating lifestyles simultaneously.
Yes. Radical discipleship is a way to renew the church. And one of the things I'm going to be talking about is the younger leaders in many places are calling us to raise the bar on discipleship. Yesterday, I talked about looking sideways and the need in the church, particularly in my culture. You'll have to figure out your own. But in my culture, for all the talk about the lordship of Christ, everybody knows your career comes first, getting the house in the suburbs, getting a way of life. And we're perfectly willing to let modernity and a very Eurocentric, individualistic European culture and the global mall define our sense of what's important, what's of value. And I'm going to come back to this, but he was talking about a call to more radical discipleship. And for the times in which we live, it's absolutely essential because the marketers of the new global economy, and I think the global economy has taken on characteristics of empire, defining for people all over the planet what is important, what is of value, what is ultimate, defined primarily in economic terms. And if you don't know the book Colossians Remixed, written by a Canadian, Brian Walsh, and his wife Sylvia Kismet, it talks, a great phrase, talks about the global economy collectivizing our imaginations. And it's like the merchants of cool have the patent right to cool. So they're defining for young people, not only in Britain, the United States, but all over the planet, what is cool, what is important, what is value. And they are creating a global youth culture that I talked about yesterday, where young people are wearing the same jeans, they're drinking the same soda, they're watching the same MTV, they're all into American Idol. And this is called evangelization. And when it happens in the church, it's called formation. So my great concern is that we are not aware of the extent to which our very affluent suburban cultures and the messages from the mall are doing formation on us and our young people. And let me just stay with this for a minute, defining our notion of what is important, what is of value, what is good life. And so the pushback and the beginning to radical discipleship is discovering in the Bible that we need to bring Scripture to bear, not just on moral and spiritual issues, but on cultural values too. and we don't in my country. And so in America, we're doing the American dream with the vengeance and trying to work Jesus in around the edges. And more churches, people have less and less time because somebody else is doing formation. And the pushback from the scripture, if we were to use scripture culturally, and the following of Christ, the paradoxical teachings of Christ, we're told the good life is not found in seeking life, but it's only in losing life in service to God and others that we figure out what we're on the planet for. So we'll come back there, but thank you for that. Last chance. Anybody else? Yes, please, loudly. Conspiracy stuff. What I'm talking about, and this was something I used in my first book, is that a conspiracy means breathe with. And I believe that God is conspiring through the insignificant, the ordinary, the mustard seed, through this quiet conspiracy is quietly changing the world. And I try as an older guy to figure out where it's happening. And right now I find God breathing through a lot of your young leaders in the UK, Australia, New Zealand. There's a friend here, Jonathan, from Rutba Community that I'll talk about in a little while. So it isn't the usual sense of conspiracy, because in America, I have a few handouts about the religious right who live in terror of you European socialists, knowing that you want to collectivize this for a Marxist gulag because of the way that we do end times theology. It is just sheer terror. And I'm so glad to be here and leave that behind, but I guess I have to go back. So in any case, let me just give you the format for what we're going to do. I'm going to take you on just a quick gallop back to the future. We did that yesterday for those that were here, but just touch on the future, because what I find is all churches on both sides of the pond do long-range and strategic planning. But the irony is church leaders do it as though we're frozen in a time warp, like it's always going to be the 80s and 90s. They rarely do forecasting before they do planning. They rarely ask how's the community and that the church serves likely to change in the next 10 years. What is the impact of the recession going to have on people in your church? How do we need to reinvent and start to do stewardship education? So I'm going to do just a tiny bit of futuring, and then I'm going to take you on a quick tour. This is kind of my report from the edge, what I'm learning from your younger leaders in other countries. And I'm going to suggest some ways that we can join them. Fresh Expressions is one of the first in the whole world. The Anglicans had enough sense to learn from these younger leaders, but frankly, in a lot of the other countries, they haven't yet. So we'll do that, and then I'm going to just ask you, because I'm sure we've got some people here in the room, how many people are part of some fresh expression or new model? Okay, we're not going to have time for all of you, but we'd like to get three or four of you up at the end to have you share kind of the present status, because it's hard to keep up and you are the most recent voice. And then we're going to have you talk a little bit about comfort or discomfort with what we're saying. We want to spend the last few minutes, because this is advertised about reimagining and creating, we want to give you some time to reimagine and create and share with one of your mates new possibilities for life after Greenbelt. Several people have asked me, is there life after Greenbelt? Yes, there is. And we want to help you learn from these people, and maybe a takeaway of one possible way to move into this. And so you've got something to take home. Now, for those of you, how many of you are under 50 here? Okay, that's almost everybody. Can I just tell you, in terms of this business of older guys and younger men and women, that there are some advantages to aging, and they don't get talked about enough. Let me just give you an example. Christine and I, my wife is an Australian. She's a physician, worked with Mercy Ships. Our ministry, by the way, is called Mustard Seed Associates. We do a free monthly easy, and I forgot this yesterday, where we talk about future trends and imaginative ways that people are responding. You give us your email, it's free, we won't harass you, we'll just send it once a month. And so, John, if you just kind of circulate those around, and Elaine, if you could give this to the front row. But anyway, one of the advantages of getting older, for some of you younger people that are not looking forward to it, Christy and I were watching television the other night. We were watching the film Men in Black 2. Do you know the film? I said, Christine, have we seen this before? And she said, yeah, about 18 months ago. I said, getting old is great. There are no more reruns. Every time's the first time. It's really helping the video budget. So younger people, you've got something waiting for you. So we're going to take a quick gallop back to the future. And I have some bad news and some good news. The bad news is the situation for our poorest neighbors is getting worse. The MICA project to make poverty history is not going well in terms of reaching the millennial goals. And the recession is part of that, but there's some other reasons that are coming. So with the coming of peak oil, peak water crisis that's impacting the Middle East, they just had a session in here in terms of the Palestinian issues. One of the big issues is water rights. And our poorest neighbors, I'm working with Livability when Christine and I come back the last week of October, looking for, by the way, speaking of coming back, I'm trying to find a way to get to London tomorrow. If anybody has space in their vehicle, I don't take a lot of space. I got a bag with me. Okay, well, see me afterwards. But anyway, the future is going to be daunting for our poorest neighbors, and Livability that we're going to be working with are looking forward to the Osborne's white paper under the Cameron Clegg regime of how much the cutbacks are going to help hurt the poorest neighbors here in Britain and their ability to carry out their ministry. So we're in changing times, but as I mentioned yesterday, the middle class is under growing pressure here too. Have any of you felt the pressure with the recession, the economic pressure? Well, for those of you that are under 40, as I mentioned yesterday, you're hitting this new global economy at a much tougher time than your parents and grandparents. And let me, I know this is repeating for some of you that were with me yesterday, but just let me give you some stats. For my generation, I'm a silent generation guy, few of us spend over 20% of one income for rent or mortgage, 20% of one income. For young people today, it's 40 to 50% of two incomes, if you can swing it. And if you're trying to live in London, buying isn't even within reach anymore. That's true in Vancouver, British Columbia. It's true in Santa Barbara, California. It's true all over the planet. And more of you have been scripted and conditioned and primed to live into your parents' lifestyle, because in the evangelical church particularly, we hold up the champions of industry and business as the model we all aspire to. But many of you are teachers, social workers, and pastors are going to be having a hard time. So yesterday, we were trying to help people reimagine new ways of housing beyond single-family detached, cooperative housing, and there's some things on the reading list that I'll talk about later. So you guys are going to be facing some new pressures, and I'm really concerned that many of the schools that I've worked with on both sides of the pond that are working with young people are not giving them this news or helping them see it as an opportunity to find other ways to shelter that aren't as expensive, that are more intergenerational, more community. So we're going to be talking about that a little more. So we're in some changing times. I don't think the economic troubles, the recession is technically over, but I think we're going to be in hard times for the foreseeable future. So that's the bad news. The good news is that God is raising up a new generation of 20, 30, and 40-year-olds in Australia, New Zealand, Great Britain, Canada, and the U.S., who are creating whole new forms, and Greenbelt is one of the best places to meet them. Eliasine Rosario Cruz is a part of the community that we live in on three floors. He's a part of our ministry until he starts to Seattle University as a postulant next month. And he has had his first time speaking here at Greenbelt as a younger guy. We're going to do something in the kitchen later tonight where I'm going to talk about that colonization has been misunderstood. And people don't understand it was God's way to bless the world with the gift of the plant of life, cabbage, and coleslaw through the global economy. It's a very important discussion. And we'll be making coleslaw in the process. And then Eliasine will, of course, respond because for some reason he doesn't appreciate the empire that he lives in. So, but there are younger leaders, and so the good news is that God is raising up younger leaders. And my challenge tonight is to not only learn from them, but to invite them. Can I just tell you the problem I run across everywhere I work? Every church, inherited, established, charismatic, house church, wants to keep young people around. Don't you? Don't you want to keep your young people? I've yet to find a church in North America that's ever sat down with their teens, 20s, and 30s and asked them for their ideas about how to reimagine and revision the church. You invite their ideas, you take them seriously, you get ownership. It's no longer mom and dad's church. Capisce? Comprende, sir? So that's part of where we'll be going. So let me just start. Let me take you quickly on the tour then, and it's on the handout if you want to follow along. Oh, the bad news, I forgot to mention, church attendance. You see the church attendance in the States, it's lower than you've been told. When I started working in Britain in the 80s, you were 10 to 12% attendance. You're 6.5% today. By 2025, you're going to drop to 3.2%. But look what's happening in terms of aging. We're hemorrhaging and losing our 20 and 30-year-olds at a rate we've never seen before. That's why we need to listen to our young. We need to learn from our young because, as you can see, by 2025, 17%. In our mainline churches in the States, the teenagers are the 50-year-olds. Those are the young people everybody looks to. So that's part of the bad news. Now, as Jared McKenna says at the Peace Tree Community, in Australia, this generation does not need more slick entertainment or clever answers that numb us to what is really happening in our world. Instead, they long for a space where their deepest questions can be explored with people who are authentically living a solid alternative in terms of the radical discipleship that was mentioned here. Well, I'm going to take you on a quick tour, and this is just my way of grouping them. I group them into four streams. The emerging stream that really began with young people in the UK in the late 80s, the missional stream that began with an academic, Leslie Newbegin, the mosaic stream that I haven't been able to find here, multicultural church planners. You have some multicultural churches, but nobody seems to be intentionally doing it. And the fourth stream are the monastics. That's the Shane Claibornes that you've had here. We got Shane over to visit with you guys before he'd written anything. And he really enjoys it here. And, of course, Jonathan is here from Rutbuck Community right now. And so that's where we're going to go. How many have seen an Australian film called Strictly Ballroom? Okay, you remember Strictly Ballroom? This young guy, Chris, was destined. It's this international competition in ballroom dancing. And this is one of those really outrageous flicks from Australia. It's wonderful. But in this over-the-top kind of ballroom dancing thing, Chris, as a young 20-something, is destined to be the next world champion of the Australia ballroom dancing competition. But during one of the competitions, somebody blocks he and his partner in the dance room. Do you remember the scene? And he slides under their arms and does something unbelievable. He starts dancing his own steps. And these older people said, you know, they became appalled. We've given our lives for these steps. We've dedicated everything that we have to the... We can't allow the young people to start dancing their own steps. Do you get the message? Well, what we need is to listen and learn, because things that work good for the people that were part of charismatic renewal and so on don't always work anymore. God is doing new things in new seasons. And what's strange is while church attendance is in serious decline in all of our Western countries, the hunger among 20 and 30-year-olds for spirituality is going up. It just, what we're doing is not engaging. And that's why the emerging church movement that I began with was so important. I so enjoyed learning from Johnny Baker and others as they started Grace in St. Mary's Ealing. I had Graham Cray pull me aside a couple times and sort me out. I used to teach a worldview course for Fuller Seminary, and I really didn't get postmodernity. And he pulled me aside a couple times and got me sorted on that, and that was very helpful. But St. Mary's Ealing was one of my favorite examples, because what they did, we haven't seen in the States very much. They invited young people to plant a church within a church. And what the emerging church is very good at is contextually creating an experience that engages people that don't go to churches. And as the house church movement began to run out of gas here in the late 80s, this whole emerging thing started to happen. And so this was a church that invited young people. It was a Sunday night service. St. Mary's Ealing is a very elegant sanctuary just out near Heathrow Airport. And so Sunday night they planted this church, and older folks can go to it, but they can't mess with it. See, the mega churches, their way of keeping young people around was to get middle-aged people to put on a better show. And that's not what the emerging church movement was about. So one of the things that they did, do you remember Jubilee 2000, Forgiving Third World Debt? Well, they did a worship experience there. I've never heard of anything like it in North America. When they came into this elegant sanctuary, Anglican sanctuary, on this Sunday night, right in the front of the sanctuary was a huge block and tackle, like what you would support a truck motor. But instead of a truck motor, an enormous block of ice held up by chains. Guess what the block of ice represented? Cold heart of Northern Europeans, North Americans, unwilling to forgive third world debt. Guess what the liturgy was that night? 220 and 30-year-olds bring their candles and putting them under the block of ice. Doesn't that preach? Doesn't that speak? And I've never seen anything like that, because mission is not a part of how we do worship in America. Mission, worship is all about middle-class people, upper-middle-class people, just feeling encouraged by God, but not worshiping a God that's involved in that kind of mission. So there are a tremendous range of new models here. Vision York, Moot are part of those that are doing some new things. Frankly, when the emerging thing started in the States, it was more like doing youth work to young people to try to be a little more culturally relevant. It really didn't have, it was more about being a hip blip than really engaging people in different cultures. And the big tent that Brian McLaren started, and Brian's a lovely guy, but the big tent, Emergent Village, has now gone out of business. And what is happening in Australia, Great Britain, the emerging stream seems to be morphing into something else. I think it's starting to morph into what both the missional and the monastic. I find the young Anglicans here talking a lot about the monastic stream and the emerging language. So it's starting to disappear. And I talk about this in more detail in The New Conspirators about how this is happening. But this is not, when this came out, I wasn't aware that that change was going on. So that's group number one. That's the emerging stream real quick. The second stream didn't start with young practitioners. It started with Leslie Newbegin. Do you know who Leslie Newbegin is? A missionary in India from the UK, came back here, wrote The Gospel in a Plural Society, very influential. There was a group that got started in the US called the Gospel and Culture Network. I call them the Leslie Newbegin Fan Club. And this group of people really got keen on what he was saying about trying to get the church to focus outwardly in mission. There are three books that have come out of that. One is called The Missional Church. The other is something about POTS. But the third one is the best one, The Stormfront. And Stormfront is on the list that you have there. It's a really good book on what it means to be outwardly focused in mission. It's really well done. Let me just mention one other church from the emerging side. It has more of a missional flavor. Phil Wall, Wendy Wall, Russell Rook, Charlotte Rook. Do you know the Rains Park Salvation Army Church plant from the early 90s? Have you heard about this one? It kind of crosses between the emerging and missional. They located near an estate. They got several of their members to actually live on the estate. They sent one of the young moms off for a weekend that was living in a really run-down flat. And as she was living in this run-down flat, she went off for the weekend. They did a total remodel of the place. She came back from holiday, and her place had been totally restored. They wanted to adopt, Phil and Wendy wanted to adopt an AIDS orphan, and they couldn't work it out. So they took their money out of savings and got several of these other young couples to take their family money out of savings. This is radical. This is radical discipleship. And they started putting on AIDS banquets in the UK, all over the UK. And they didn't ask for money. They gave away their savings, £10 a head, with a little brochure on the parable of the talents. And if you need this money more than the AIDS orphan, spend it on yourself. But if you want to check out the investment in the talents, and people did, at Spring Harvest, it consummated by them giving away £500,000. And that resulted in one small church plant starting Hope HIV. Google Hope HIV. It's still going. It's not only caring for AIDS orphans, but training up a whole new generation of leaders. So Stream 2 is missional, making a difference. The emerging stream really is too, because it's reaching out to people that are unchurched in different subcultures. And so what makes this different is that it's not about people inside the building. In fact, Tim Morey is a young church planter in Torrance, California. He works with the Covenant Church in America, a Swedish denomination, and they've done away with their old church planting. The only churches they plant are missional churches. What does that mean? It means that church plant, New Life Torrance, has no programs for people inside the building, no Christian aerobics, no knitting circles. You meet in a rented facility for worship. The worship isn't always as edgy and creative as the emerging church, but it's missional. And the only other time they meet are for in small groups like cell groups that you have here that are equipping people to reach out to their neighbors. As a result of this, this church in its first 3 years planted three other churches. They have virtually all of their members in a small group and everyone involved in ministry every week. In America, that is really unusual. One of the differences between our cultures is American churches, the most that I work with, don't have a single ministry in their community. It would be unusual to find a Baptist church in the UK that didn't have 2 to 3 to 4 ministries in their community. You're already more missional than we are. But this church is radical because they got everybody involved in mission. 30% of their budget is invested outward in mission. So the real, you know, a lot of people are using the missional language, but a way, a criteria is trying to figure out how much of the time and resource of the church really being focused outwardly. And they actually have a policy they call out counseling. So if you come to their church and say, I'm looking for a really good place to meet my needs and my family's needs, they will out counsel you to a church like that. But they won't invite you to be a part of their church. Now, that's pretty radical, isn't it? So that's stream number two. Stream number three is, I call it Mosaic, multicultural church planters. Now, you have ethnic churches. In fact, there was an article in one of your newspapers, I think it was the Telegram? And they said there are more ethnic churches being planted in London right now than Starbucks. And so there's a tremendous growth among ethnic churches while the inherited churches are in decline. But there, I haven't been able to find anybody that's intentionally planting multicultural churches. Is there anybody here doing this? Okay. Well, it's there are some in Great Britain, in Australia. But let me explain where this started. The Covenant Church in America, that is the model I just used, half of their missional church plants are multicultural because, as I mentioned yesterday, the United States will be be the first non-European Western nation by the year 2040. And so these churches, what makes them unique is they are more missional, outward-focused in mission, but they are discovering what it means to be family across race, class, and culture, and that's radical too. So they are in one another's lives. They're not one another's homes. Sanctuary Covenant Church in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Ephraim Smith is the pastor. They do hip-hop worship. 40% of their congregation is African-American. 40% is European. 20% is Latino and Asian. And they are in one another's homes. They're learning from one another's culture. And a lot of liberal churches have racial sensitivity groups, but I'm not finding churches anywhere that are helping us to be prepared to receive the gifts that we have to receive from our African, Asian, Latino friends. A lot of people have been through racial sensitivity don't realize that Europeans have anything to receive from other cultures. So this is a wake-up call. This church is in an inner-city community. They meet in a rented middle school. Their office is in a drug rehab to give back 50% of their budget. 50% of their budget is invested in local and global mission. And so that's another model. They actually have something called Journey to Mosaic for leaders in the Covenant Church, white leaders as well as others, where you take a bus trip starting in a black church in Oakland, California. You go down and spend a day with the farm workers. You wind up with the homeless in East Los Angeles to prepare people to live and serve God in a multicultural future. So that's number three. Number four are our monastic friends. And it really didn't begin with Shane Claiborne. Shane's a friend. And Jonathan, I was at the meeting in 2005 in Raleigh, Durham, where they gave birth to this. And it was a singularly non-postmodern meeting. They had one academic lecture after another for 8 hours. It would not have worked well with an emerging church group in the UK. But what they gave birth to is wonderful. And I'll talk about Rutbuck Community in simple way in a minute. But it didn't begin with Shane and Jonathan. How many know the name Viv Grigg, a New Zealander, a Kiwi? Well, Viv Grigg started monastic churches way back in the late 70s. And out of that comes Servants with the Poor, Asian Servants with the Poor. There's another group called Word Made Flesh in Australia, Urban Neighbors of Hope, that have communities in Bangkok, Sydney, and Melbourne, where they're living like Protestant Franciscans in inner city communities. They're in community together, caring for one another, doing serious spiritual practices, sometimes morning and evening prayers, and they become a part of poor communities, often living at the same lifestyle of their neighbors. This is very edgy, okay? That's why people read Shane Claiborne's book and they're not ready to move to Philadelphia, because it's a land too far. Of the four streams, the monastic streams in the old tradition and new offer the most robust critique of modern culture and the global economy. I'm not finding that as much in Europe. What I'm finding is the wonderful writings of Stuart Murray are really calling the young emerging and missional and monastic to become countercultural examples, the kind of radical discipleship that was asked about at the beginning. But I'm not hearing that as much in some of the Anglican streams. But I think we desperately need some other models, because in the United States, there are people who dearly love Jesus, but they live in super affluent suburban communities. And they don't realize, because they're not looking sideways, at how much the culture is defining their values. And I don't think those families living on their own have any prayer of ever being countercultural. They've got to dress alike, look alike, drive the same kind of cars. The kids have to wear the same designer clothes. And I think the only hope, and I'm not down on the suburbs, but I think we need communities in the suburbs that offer other models of life. And the one that I talked about yesterday was a co-housing community that moved into inner city Oakland, California, but there's also a co-housing community that's in Silverdale, Washington, that's more in a small town area. And these are 25 houses. I didn't talk about it yesterday because I ran out of time. 25 houses on 7 acres. They clustered their housing together and moved cars to the perimeter. They're actually designed so you can't get into the front door of your house without talking to your neighbors. There's a certain distance between them. They typically use floor space more densely so that they can have a common building that they have meals in a couple times a week. You can also use it to entertain friends or have a family reunion. Theirs has a library, a children's play area, and a lovely dining hall. And it's a great place to hang out. And so that is another model. The 25th unit is for families in transition. Not all of the people in this community are Christian, by the way, but most of them are. And they come together from different church backgrounds and nurture one another. They live less expensively, so they have more time and money free. They are serious about spiritual practices, though they're not doing morning and evening prayers. Many of them are involved in ministry. The last unit that sold just a few weeks ago was a 2-bedroom, bath and a half for $157,000, which is, you translate that into pounds, it's not bad. And the other 3.5 acres they've kept as a park woodland, and the county loves them because they're protecting the wetlands. So part of what we were talking about yesterday is learning from the young monastics, not just trying to do radical discipleship over the top of middle-class culture and the artifacts and architecture of that culture that's getting too expensive for you younger people, but imagining some whole new ways to live that also reflect a very different idea of what the celebration's about. And I talked yesterday about the all of the streams are very keen on following the radical Jesus, but they're also very keen on kingdom theology. And the language that's used out of N.T. Wright's book, Surprised by Hope, and in his third volume, is the imagery of a great bodily resurrected community coming home to restored creation, as I said yesterday, where healing finally comes to the broken, justice to the poor, peace to the nations. It's a much bigger dream, and culturally, we need to find ways to put that into art and music and celebration so that people have a new reason to get out of bed Monday morning instead of just letting getting ahead in our careers and getting ahead in the suburbs and the Jesus thing being a devotional add-on to all of the above. What these four streams all have in common is, in terms of the question that was asked at the beginning on radical discipleship, they're all challenging us to raise the bar on what it means to be followers of Christ. The word that is the big word that I've learned first here in the UK from your young leaders is the word authentic. They are keen to see authentic whole life faith, where there's some difference, because in America, you cannot, in the affluent suburbs, have any idea whether people are followers of Christ or not, because there is so much conformity to the dominant culture and so little time left. As I mentioned yesterday, regular church attendance is, for many Christians, is once a month, and you can't do Christian formation on that. Let me just end with the one model of Camden House that's a part of the new monastic movement in Camden, New Jersey. It's one of the most polluted cities in America. Brown fields, kids suffering from asthma. It's horrid. Camden community was planted in this urban wasteland. They work with a Catholic church and they teach at a Catholic school. They decided, as one of the things they wanted to do, was to start urban farming. One of the things you find with the monastic stream is they're keen to get back to the local and finding ways to work with the land. In our community, as I mentioned yesterday, we grow about 40% of our vegetable on an urban lot, and pray God the tomatoes are ripe when we get back. We haven't had much sunshine. But anyway, they're working in this teaching primary age kids how to do farming, urban farming and agriculture. But concerned about the waste fields, they found out that clover seed, when it's planted, actually takes out some of the toxins. And the school was right next to Brownfield. So Andrea, who was a part of this community, got an idea to have the kids get a bunch of clover seed and wrap it in compost balls. And then late one night, when there was nobody around, this whole class bombarded Brownfields with these compost balls filled with clover seed. Well, guess what happened 6 weeks later? The fields were blossoming. And that was just small. That didn't change all of the problems in Camden, New Jersey. But what's different about the four stream? They're not about planting new churches as a rule. They're about being new church. And they're looking at residential ways to live together to more authentically embody what it looks like to follow Christ. So what I'd like to ask you to do is turn to one another. What in this very quick tour gives you encouragement or gives you concern? What gives you encouragement? What gives you concern? So find somebody next to you. Meet a new friend. What gives you encouragement? We're going to talk about resources at the end. Everybody find somebody in terms of new models down under and so on. But what concerns, what opportunities? One at a time, please. Well, you'll need to come this way because the mics don't work that well, they tell me. Yes.
Very encouraged by what I've heard, but as someone who I think from your talk yesterday feels trapped in suburbia, just a bit concerned that it's passing me by, really. And, you know, I'd like to be part of it more, but there I am with my mortgage and and all the rest of it.
Well, and the good news is for all of us, whether we live in suburbia, cities, small towns, rural areas, I'm going to talk about some ways forward for all of us that are within reach. Please.
Okay. Gray hair. Gray hair ministry. I haven't heard anything about it.
Oh, well, yeah, if you didn't notice, I have some gray hair and missing hair. But my church, I go to an Anglican church, and it's all about the gray hairs. And we have a younger priest in in the United States, he's in his 40s, and so that's really young. So we're attracting some young couples, but they haven't even met each other yet. And so we're planning a venue to do that and also ask them for their ideas. But we need to do things for seniors, but most churches, that's only my church, that's where the focus is. Anybody else, real quickly, come on down. And then can I get two or three of you that are part of New Expressions? I think there's somebody here that's a part of a new church plant. Come on down. There were somebody over here. Come on down. Come on. You're younger. Should be able to get up. There we go. Okay.
I was enthused about the living together in sure. ways that you can actually pull out if it gets too
sure.
Too hard. And I was talking to people next door, and they were saying they're really in a nice house and they don't want to move.
Sure.
But I said, what about your kids? They might really want to do it. And sure. then when you get older, you might move in with them.
There you go. Well, and in the States, one of the things that's happening, because of the economy, the single-family detached lifestyle that was really created after World War II is a very expensive way to live. So for economic reasons, the middle class is joining the working poor and creating intergenerational households again, not out of Christian conviction, out of economic necessity. And we have several young church planters here. Your name and what's the church you're working with?
Oh, I'm not a church planter. I just had sort of a...
Okay,
this cool. one of the comments, and you said, I thought it was really interesting when you talked about discipleship and young people in terms of there's a lot of youth work going on, but what about people who are sort of, when they graduate, leave university, people in their 20s, 30s? Is it a question of discipleship in terms of having separate groups within us, the same church for different age ranges, or can you work on integrating everybody in discipleship?
Boy, that's a good question. I mentioned this yesterday someplace up here. I prefer to be down at this level. My wife and I, those of you bear with it, were with me yesterday. You've heard of Purpose-Driven Life? Well, my wife and I actually wrote a book that came out 3 months before Purpose-Driven called Living on Purpose. But we have not been afflicted, as we told people yesterday, with 22 million sales. And the place that we encourage people to begin moving towards a more radical whole-life discipleship, this authentic whole-life faith, is very simple. Baptists, Presbyterians, Anglicans all believe that pastor and missionaries are not the only ones called, right? Don't you believe everybody's called? Well, the premise of our book is, if we believe that, then why in the blankety-blank don't we create processes of discernment to help laity actually discover their calling, write it down, and live into it? So for me, that's a simple entry point into that. And our little book, they don't have any more in the bookstore, but you can order them from us. But our little book is simply a process of discernment, writing down how you're hearing God call you through Scripture, good place to begin, through prayer, through the needs of others. What are the things that really tear at your heart? Could be God's call. Through your own giftedness and brokenness, and hammer out a personal or family calling statement. When we did this I'm blanking, Spring Harvest. A couple came up to us the year after, and they developed a family mission statement, family calling statement, called to be the hospitality of Christ in our neighborhood. They freed up one evening a week. Different members of the family invited neighbors in, and over a period of months, they not only saw the neighborhood begin to change as a result of opening their homes and lives, they saw their kids begin to change. Because the kids were discovering the good life of God is not getting the latest to the newest, but it's discovering how God can use your lives to make a difference. Christine says from on board the ship, when she was working, you know, they'd be in port for 3 to 6 months, the little kids on board the ship would bring their toys to play with the kids in the hospital. And then when they got to be 11 or 10, they would help with screening. And we met them now as young adults. They could never be satisfied with a job just making big bucks, because they discovered as children the good life of God is the life given away. So helping people discover that, and then our 40-day plan is to help people reinvent their time styles and lifestyles to live into their calling and find a specific concrete way to discover how God can use your mustard seeds to make a difference locally or globally. I don't think that's too scary, is it? But it takes some work to get there. Okay, church planner. Oh, we've got several church planners. Look at that. God answers prayer. Go ahead. Your name and your church?
My name is Harry Kingham. I'm from Bradford and go to a New Expressions Sunday morning worship called Soul Space. Okay. But what was your question? Because I'm
just describe Soul Space briefly for us.
I guess it's that in Bradford there's a house which is near the university. It's called Desmond Tutu House, and I think Soul Space has attracted a youthful congregation, partly because it's near the university.
Sure.
And there's been some connection with the university in the past, but I'm fairly new to it, so I don't know what that connection is. But it's open to anybody, and I suppose the worship is fairly informal, but still connected to the Anglican Church.
Sure.
And because of the priest who leads that congregation, it's had a heavy slant towards activism in the past, but also to hospitality and welcoming maybe asylum seekers and refugees.
Oh, that's great.
But I think for us in Bradford, one of my concerns about all the things you've mentioned till now is that, and especially in Bradford where there's a large Muslim population, I haven't heard anything about how to reach out to Muslim brothers and sisters,
sure,
and to share with them and to learn more from them. Everything you've described seems to be quite Christian-centered, quite Christian-focused, without going into the interfaith area.
No, it's a very important area. It's just of time limitations. I'm just trying to report on what I'm learning, but we obviously need to be reaching out across religious and cultural boundaries. Your name and the church.
My name is Justin. It's a church in Holloway in North London, St. Luke's Church in Holloway, which used to be the home of the Greenbelt Festival for a number of years.
Okay.
A new experiment started up over the last year called Vox Holloway. This is a community choral singing group for people of no faith background or of any faith background.
Sure.
Who loved singing, or who loved the idea of singing. There are no auditions. You don't have to have any previous experience of it. Mm-hmm. We sort of sent the word out about a year ago, and were overwhelmed with the response. Nearly 100 people coming together to sing Handel's Messiah, to raise money for the Amos Trust Street Child World Cup in South Africa. Meeting on a Tuesday night, and the church giving room and welcome to this group. They cracked Handel's Messiah. They raised £6,000 for street children in South Africa, and then went on to do subsequent concerts in spring and the summer, raising £15,000 for the Haiti appeal.
Wonderful.
But creating friendships, giving people the fulfillment of singing and music, often from non-expert backgrounds.
Sure.
Creating networks and it's all happening within the domain of the church, but absolutely open to people who are not members.
Sure, thank you. Do you see why younger leaders are encouraging me? This kind of imagination, risk taking, and getting after it. Please, your name.
I'm up here because youth is relative. My name's Kieran O'Reilly. I'm from the Catholic Worker. We have three expressions of that in Oxford. A farmhouse in Rickmansworth and Haringey, based around houses of hospitality, live-in community, but extended community. In England, it's all focused mostly around destitute refugees. And because we're a pacifist movement, we're involved in ongoing witness against the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. In Dalston, that means outside the Army showroom. For the farmhouse, it's outside Northwood headquarters.
Wonderful.
And Oxford is where the British military dead have the postmortems, so we have a weekly vigil there.
Good on you. Yeah, that's so important. Catholic Workers has played such a huge part in our culture. And, of course, Shane Claiborne, as you know, he's been nurtured a great deal by the Catholic Workers movement. And I'm so grateful to God. Thank you for sharing. One more, and we're going to have to stop the line because we're going to run out of time in just a minute. Go ahead, please, your name.
I'm Caroline. I'm from St. John's of Phillips The Hague in Holland.
Yes.
And what we've started up is a monthly service first.
Uh-huh.
And the idea is to reach out to people who are unchurched or de-churched, never come across a church, vaguely interested, creative, all ages, but mainly aiming towards young people. But those of us who organize it, well, we're anywhere between teens and people in their 40s.
Sure. Well.
And it draws quite a lot of teenagers, but also people in their 60s, 70s.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's from all
Wonderful.
Ages.
Wonderful. Yeah, many of the emerging churches are becoming intergenerational churches. Karen Ward's church started with mainly younger people, but there are people my age that are active part of that now. Thank you for that. And there's a group in Holland, like Speak in England, called Time to Turn. They're living in community. They're doing a lot of political activism that's very edgy. Very quickly.
Okay. My name's Paul. I'm leading a church called Reconnect, which is in Poole on the south coast. And we're a missional community. We've developed a rule of life, so quite inspired by sort of neo-monasticism.
Right.
Trying to live radically, splitting down into household units and opening those households up to people of faith or no faith whatsoever. So hospitality and kind of radical discipleship is an attractive communal, missional movement within the town that we live in.
Wonderful. Can I just ask those that shared and others that are involved in innovative projects, could you please come up? I'll have a yellow pad. We want to learn from you. We want to find out more of what you're doing. We want to get your websites, because part of what we do in MSA is try to keep in touch with the lively edge of what God is doing. So if you wouldn't mind coming back up, let me just tell you quick stories of a way forward, how to do this without moving into the inner city or doing something radical, not only of discovering God's calling, but listening to other voices. There's a Lutheran church in the Seattle area, and they have something called mustard seed. It's different from our mustard seed. But what they do, it's a very large intergenerational church, but it invites voices from the margins, not only people that are younger, but people that are not a part of the center of power. And the woman who heads this up, Eileen Hansen, used to be a business startup person. And essentially the model is she helps anybody that wants to give birth to a new ministry come to her, and they don't have to go through bureaucracy central. They don't have to go through the vestry. She helps them give birth. A guy in his 60s wanted to help single-parent moms with their cars. She helped him give birth to Under the Hood. So that's one model. Another model, if you Google YFC Toronto, they have a program called Launch that takes young people's ideas seriously in a way I haven't seen any of our Christian colleges do. Any 15 to 19-year-old that has a new idea, like I've been sharing, of a way to launch a new missional venture brings it to them. If they feel it's a workable idea, they assign them a business mentor, they help them develop a business plan and launch. The book I talk about, the example I talk about in The New Conspirators is Ted was 19. He was kind of blowing in the wind, didn't know what to do with himself, got a short-term mission trip to Africa. While he was there, he noticed pastors were having to walk over 2 hours one direction to visit members of their flock. Ted came back to Toronto. Ted loved bicycles. He collected 140 beat-up bicycles, put them in working order, and sent them to this village that he worked with. Before the second cargo container was ready, he had given birth to AfroCycle at 19, a new parachurch ministry out of Canada. You can still find it. The second container load was 400 bicycles, and the container was designed to be a bicycle repair shop to help provide an income stream for the ministries. Do you get it? We've got 13-year-olds in our churches starting their own webpage business, and when they get to church youth group, they've got middle-aged adults telling them when to stand up and sit down, but never invite their imagination. Please, for God's sake and for the sake of the future of the church, if you don't do anything else out of Green Belt this year, sit down with your teenagers, your 20, your 30-year-olds, and take the risk of asking them to reimagine and revision the church for a changing world. If we get their ideas, if we invest in their dreams, they're going to stay with the church. They're going to give birth like your emerging church leaders have, and you're going to see renewal that you haven't seen. Fresh Expressions is a great beginning, but please talk to your young people. September 18th, we're getting young people in our church together for the very first time. Young marrieds and singles, they've never even met each other. They just come for Mass and head out. So pray God. New beginnings, but start with your own mustard seed. Do take time to discern how God is calling you. Christine and I go on prayer retreats 4 times a year. If you're married, get somebody to look after the kids. Go with your spouse and find a place to listen for God's call. If you're single, get some mates, get some friends. Take some time to listen, to hear how God is calling you in the world that is changing so incredibly, and discover how God can use our mustard seeds to be a difference. Let me say a closing prayer. And I'm going to start with a little time of silence. And I'm going to invite you to imagine one new way God might use your mustard seed to create a new form of ministry, to go away with your spouse, to plan a party. One of the best ways to begin in the suburbs is to start planning parties that celebrate the kingdom of God as a wedding feast. What would you do for food? Would you have Jewish folk dancing? We need to learn to party the kingdom better. That's a wonderful place to start. So think about one creative thing out of Greenbelt 2010 looking sideways, one creative way that God might use your life to make a difference. So let's just be in silence for a few moments, and then I'll say a closing prayer. Creator God, I am so grateful for Greenbelt. I'm so grateful for so many Christian friends that I met over the years here in the UK that have taught me so much about following Jesus Christ. I'm particularly grateful for the young and risk-taking that have really challenged me over and over again. Now, I just pray for all of us as we leave Greenbelt that you'll stir up within us one new possibility. One small way, whether it's talking to our kids, the young people in our church, getting together with our spouse, some friends for discernment on calling, but one new beginning. Plan a party, reach out to refugees in our community, start finding ways to connect with Muslim neighbors. Lord, whatever that is, in the name of the risen Christ, please, Spirit of God, help us to imagine new ways to follow Christ in these changing times. Please help us to join the young people in pursuing a more authentic whole life faith, and help us to create churches like Fresh Expressions that begin to reach out to our neighbors near and far. In the name of the risen Christ, dear God, help us. Amen.